Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, hello once again. My name's Tim Nicholson and this is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, Joy's very own motoring program, and we are happy to have you travelling with us in the back seat or the front seat or possibly on the roof racks. You could be anywhere. I don't know where you are, but we are very, very happy you're here. And I am personally very happy and thankful for the wonderful Pete and Cravings, and he will be back next week and we'll be talking about more delicious food, so ensure that you're around at that same time. And I'm also very happy to have in the studio Mike Costello and Dan Gardner. Hi, boys.
Hello. How are we? You mentioned being in the back seat or maybe on the roof racks, but yeah, you didn't say in the boot, tied up. So that's unusual. What's going on?
Well, look. That could be a sexy thing, depending on if you've seen that movie Out of Sight, starring Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney.
Oh, yes. The chemistry in that was electric, wasn't it?
Look, if I was in the boot with Jennifer Lopez...
You can't really control chemistry. It's just one of those things. It's there or it's not.
It's there or it's not.
I'm sure chemists would beg to differ with you there, Mike. You can control chemistry quite happily, actually. It's a science.
That's a good point.
So, well, I mean, science could be anything we want it to be.
And we're talking about the science of cars today, aren't we?
Oh, God, that was amazing.
Thank you. That was a dull hour of radio.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? Look, no, we've got lots coming up. We're going to have a bit of a look at an interesting little segment in the automotive world in Australia that's really growing, and that's kind of, I guess you call it a subcompact SUV, a crossover. What do we want to call these things?
Four-wheel drivers are shrinking and their popularity is growing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tiny little try-hard off-roaders, I guess you call them.
Hey, they can get over curbs just fine, I'll have you know.
That's true. There's certainly no Suzuki Jimny, which kind of, I guess, would technically fit in that category, but it actually has off-road ability. We're talking about, of course, Nissan Jukes, Holden Traxxes, and all that kind of stuff. And we're just going to have a look at what the good and the bad of that segment
is. And also what it's doing to sales of traditional light cars like Holden Barinas, because they are plummeting as a result.
They really are,
actually.
It's
very interesting.
Which is a bit of a shame. So, and then, Mike, you're gonna take us through a very interesting new car from BMW. I believe.
Yes, I was fortunate enough to travel to Austria recently to have a spin in the first ever front-wheel drive BMW, which
would
make many a purist spit out their coffee in disgust. But there's a good reason why they're doing this, and I will go into that a little later on. So
cool. And you're inside an Italian later, Dan, as well, I believe.
Well, you never know your luck, but I always plan it on a Saturday, yes. No, I'm talking a little bit about the Fiat 500 and Abarth update, which happened this week just past.
Yeah.
But the most notable car from the day was the one that I wasn't on the launch to drive initially.
Ooh, sounds mysterious. Mm. I certainly won't ask you about it later.
We're just going to leave you hanging.
Exactly. That's how we roll here. We're so mysterious at Fender Bender, aren't we? It's why we're sitting here with hoods over our heads. No, that's just torture porn. No, I'm just being silly now. Now, look, there is. It's been a big week in news, boys, as it always is. And something that piqued my interest was Renault Australia have bought one example of the Twizy to Australia. Now, we know the Twizy.
I just heard Byron Matthew Darkus, our good friend, scream all the way from Brunswick.
No, he's panted out as we speak.
Very, very, very faintly hear him. Yep. Carrying over the buildings.
How exciting, though. Like the Twizy, the quadricycle, is that what we're calling it?
And this is kind of where the point of contention comes in, because it's a car that doesn't really know what it is. Mm. And I shouldn't even say car, because is it a bike? Is it a car? Well, no one knows. It's like a weird segment-straddling vehicle, open-doored, scissor-doored sort of electric runabout thing is the best way to put it. No one knows what the hell this is. And that's kind of the reason why Australia hasn't got it so far, is because there is no legal framework for a vehicle like this, because it doesn't fit in any existing frameworks, and so they have to invent something new. And Renault believes that if it brings a evaluation car here, that perhaps it'll get the ball rolling on that. If people who make the rules can actually see the thing in the flesh, maybe they'll understand it a little better. They did the same with an electric Kangoo van. They put one on trial at Australia Post, just in the same kind of way. If you can get these things in the country in some form, it'll really make a difference. And I guess that's what they're going for.
It's quite interesting because, I mean, it is quite a bit wider than, like, as they want to kind of have it registered as some kind of like a scootery kind of thing. Is that, I think that's the what the other alternative would be. But it is a lot bigger than a scooter. Like, this thing's quite wide, isn't it?
I don't think it's much smaller than a smart car, is it? I've never actually seen one.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's sort of, yeah, absolutely. It's about that sort of size. But it's kind of, it's not the same category as a very small car. It's got outboard wheels. Is it a two-seater or just a one?
It's a two-seater. You sit.
Is it?
You sit.
Oh, it's the tandem style, isn't it?
Yeah. Not side by side, but tandem style.
So they're going to have to create a new segment for this car. Then you're going to have to create a new category in ANCAP testing for this new segment. It's fraught with bureaucracy and red tape, and Australia is notoriously bad at dealing with introducing new rules and regulations.
Interestingly, Euro NCAP recently tested a bunch of these vehicles, because in Europe there's a whole heap. There's five or six brands making this kind of car, and in Europe it makes a whole lot of sense because tiny roads, and electrification is much bigger there, and these are mostly electric vehicles, and they all failed miserably at the Euro NCAP test. But then again, I'd much rather be in one of these than a motorbike.
Totally.
Because at least you've got some sort of protection. So I guess it does depend on how you classify these vehicles.
Yeah.
So Renault's got its work cut out, but at least it's trying. It's leading the cause. It's all a savvy marketing tool, of course. But
yeah, totally.
At least it's trying.
Currently, as we said previously, this is most like a quadricycle or quad bike, as most people refer to them. The main difference with this is that it's not deadly where quad bikes are. And so Renault are really keen to not have this categorised as a quadricycle because currently they aren't legal to use on the road for very good reason. There's also another car company that I recently visited called Tomcar that produce Australia's, in a few years, it will be probably the biggest car manufacturer in, in Australia. They make an offer, they call it an all-terrain vehicle, which is the safest, they say, available in Australia. It's all made in Australia with 65% Australian parts, source parts. And they are also campaigning for a very similar thing that Renault are doing with this Twizy, that their car and the Twizy is much, much safer than a quadricycle. And if they can get a new category underway that will allow them to use that on the road, that will be a huge bonus to them, huge boost to sales. Because suddenly people who are now buying them just for agricultural use and off-road will then be able to use them on-road as well, which opens up whole new possibilities. So fingers crossed for that, because that's two companies who will benefit, not just Renault, our own home-built and all-Australian Tom car.
It's all happening, guys. It's certainly a category that's going to open up, so we will keep our eye on it. Now, guys, the local sales came out this week, car sales. Who do we think? Who do we think is the top-selling car, or what do we think is the top-selling
Renault
car?
Renault Fluence.
It is very close to being that. It also might be the
least popular.
I'm trying to think.
Bentley Mulsanne.
Yeah. It is also up there. Well, we've obviously got... So there's two big sellers, the Toyota Corolla and the Mazda 3, and they are fighting it out, ladies and gentlemen.
Duking it out.
They are really duking it out, so much so that they are just... I'm bad at maths. I'm going to say 21 units apart so far this year.
Which is remarkable when you consider that we're talking, you know, figures of close to 26,000 units, and they're separated by 20.
It's bonkers.
It's pretty remarkable how close these two cars are. One of the two is going to be Australia's most popular car, as has been the case for years now. These two have shared the crown. Yeah. The Mazda is the better vehicle, but the Toyota has the rock-solid Toyota reputation behind it. A lot of fleets buy it. Mazda don't actually give a damn if they're the most popular brand, because at the end of the day, they sell their cars to actual people, private buyers. Therefore, they make more money.
Yeah.
Whereas Toyota sell most of their Corollas to fleets. There's not as much money in it. It's not as lucrative. But they do get the bragging rights. And right now, Toyota is leading by the narrowest of margins
after it had
a strong July.
If I was Mazda, I would be considering a little bit of industrial espionage followed by a really good smear campaign. That's what I'd be doing.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, totally. Steal a couple of secrets and then also make it look bad somehow. Because as Mike says, the only reason people buy Toyota Corollas is because of their previous reputation. They're pretty rock solid. They're very reliable. All you need to do is just introduce one little pixel of doubt in the public's mind, and suddenly Mazda will come storming through with its car, which, as you say, is better.
And it is interesting because Mazda will insist that it doesn't care because of the fact that it has a much more lucrative market for the three. But Mazda isn't a very big company elsewhere in the world. It's only in Australia where Mazda's even in contention to be the number one.
Yeah.
Everywhere else in the world, including in its home market of Japan, it's a relative minnow.
Yeah.
And so I think actually there'd be a fair bit at stake for the company to be number one somewhere. Anywhere in the world, even a market as tiny as Australia. And so it might well be that it actually means a whole lot.
I reckon it does too, and I think you're right. And I think that if it does end up being the number one selling car in the country, you can guarantee they will, within seconds, have a release out saying, oh, look at us, we're number one. I mean, we don't care. We don't care, whatever.
Zoom,
but
zoom,
look
baby.
At us, we're number one.
Absolutely.
Now,
right.
I'm going to put you onto something here, Mike Costello. At the
Hello.
Start of the year,
excuse me,
you said the Mazda 3 will be the top selling car this year.
I did. I even wrote it in a story.
Did you?
I wrote a, you know, a big story about this is the most important launch of the year, and I said, you can guarantee, you can bet your boots in print that this will be the number one car, and I will look like a royal dick if that doesn't happen.
There might have to be some pants off running around the studio if that doesn't happen.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Because that,
you would not be the first person to spend time in this studio naked, and I am one of them.
Yeah.
Hello.
That's true, actually.
Am I sitting in the same chair that you were in when you did that?
Because
I might change.
I'm just going to go and get some chucks and some spray and wipe, but do stick around. This is Fender Bender on Joy.
The spray and wipe means that you won't stick around.
True. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We are a very global radio station, and you can listen anywhere if you have the interwebs.
Anywhere. The Joy app.
You can
location.
You could just open a web browser and even do it there, though, if you wanted to.
Like, yeah, you can listen now on the website.
Old school.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you have any questions or you just want to say, hey, what's up, girl? Please text in 0427 at Joy 949.
Where did you just get possessed by...
Where did Tim just go?
I do not
very
know.
Very sassy this morning, aren't we?
I've been watching Orange is the New Black, so
that explains
pretty
it.
Sassy at the moment. Uh-huh. Email on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you. So, boys, some other... a little local newsage this week. Jaguar F-Type, which I know, Dan, you're a bit of a... got the horn for that car, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite cars of all.
Well, bad luck.
He literally just reverted to being British again.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah,
after all this work
villain.
He's done.
This is so... yes, very true, very true. Now, I'm really not very patriotic when it comes to cars, but the F-Type is really one of my favourite cars of all. And now the F-Type is under the scrutiny and has potentially a safety problem.
Issue. Yeah.
And it has been, it will be recalled. Now, the problem relates to its little pop-up spoiler at the back.
Ooh.
Which, emerges, erects when at certain speeds.
Its spoiler has some erectile dysfunction.
It does. They're just popping a little Viagra in its glove box and it's solved the problem. No, what happens is there's a special design element in the car that if that pop-up spoiler fails for any reason, it will limit the top speed of the car. Clever little safety feature, but that doesn't work. So what happens potentially is if you go at very high speeds way in excess of the legal limit in Australia, the spoiler may not pop up and the speed limit won't be limited. So you don't get that added and vital downforce on the back of the car, which is up to 120 kilos of downforce. That's a good few bags of cement in the boot. And so if you do happen to do those speeds for whatever reason, circuit or not, Northern Territory, possibly, then you won't have that extra downforce and the back end could be very light and it could result in a particularly big accident.
Typical Jaguar. Breaking down as usual.
Honestly.
Well, that's the thing. It hasn't actually broken down. It's done the opposite. It'll go faster than it should.
Oh, listen to you defending your country. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I like the car.
No, I know. Yes, and I think all eight of the particular variants that have been sold have been recalled. So good luck.
Yeah, it only applies, I think, to the supercharged S, which is the V6 version.
Yeah.
All other versions, eight cylinders, not affected.
Yeah, that's true. Now, guys, some news coming from overseas right now. There is a chap who is running for, I don't think it's Senate, it's the other thing in America, the House or something like that. He is a Republican Senate candidate or House candidate, rather.
I already don't like him.
Well, this is the thing. He's a 24-year-old chap. And
so he's like the equivalent of a young liberal.
Yeah, you would suggest that. His name is Jordan Haskins, and he has had an interesting history, you could say. He has, on a number of occasions, been arrested for breaking into government vehicles and masturbating inside them.
In government vehicles?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fetish?
Well, I don't know. The website I'm looking at is Jalopnik. It's a funny website. They're great. They are calling it cranking, which I think is a terrific thing.
Only government vehicles.
Yep, only government vehicles. He would remove the spark plug wires and sit in the car and masturbate while the motor was sparking and making noises.
What? That's very weird.
That is incredible. How did he get to that point? you know, if you're on the downs, if you're going, you know, increasingly depraved in your proclivities and your sexual releases, how do you get to that point?
I mean,
it's oddly specific,
it's
right?
Very specific.
If you
specific.
Have a general attraction to cars, sure, but then to introduce particular engine elements and particular vehicles.
Wow.
And, wow.
Well, look, I'm pretty impressive.
He's got a hell of an imagination on him, I'll give
yeah.
you that.
Yeah. And it's not illegal.
Well, because it was in a public place and breaking and entering as well. So I think that's
breaking and entering, fine.
That's what
but
makes it
government
illegal.
Government cars should have tinted windows. If you can't see in, technically, not in public. Oh. Anyway, we've talked about this before on Fender Bender, haven't we? There's that...
Mechanophilia.
Mechanophilia.
We've talked about it quite a bit.
Yeah. Choose the ones with leather seats.
This is where...
Yeah. Mechanophilia, you can down.
Mechanophilia is the fetish or sexual preference where you like to pop the old chap in a tailpipe.
Ooh. Well... That you'd have to. There'd be some other kind of. Well, anyway, let's not.
Yes, got.
I started really like. I was like, I don't know if mine would. Anyway, well,
yeah,
let's,
yes.
Too much information.
We have given it a lot of coverage on Fender Bender. So moving on.
Apparently, there's going to be a new Bugatti Veyron successor, guys,
with big exhaust pipes.
Yeah.
Hello,
those well in day.
I certainly would not fit. No. Yeah. So yeah. Apparently, there's another Veyron. Or not, might not be called Veyron. Who the hell knows? But I thought they were just going to end.
Well, it's funny because Volkswagen at the moment is having big financial problems. It's not making anywhere near as much money as it needs to. Volkswagen has always hemorrhaged money on the Bugatti brand that it owns, but it did it because it was like a pride thing. It wanted to show what it could achieve, and it was willing to take a hit. But now it's losing money, and it's going to invest in something that's going to keep losing money. It seems unusual.
Doesn't make sense.
Pride cometh before the fall, perhaps. But it's great news for motor enthusiasts because the Bugatti was, you know, yes, it's no longer the fastest car, but in the way that it does that speed, the stability that it has, the luxury that it has, the epicness of it in general, and they're going to have to top that with this one, or else what's the point?
Well,
so you can bet your bootstraps is going to be amazing.
It will. It's going to have in excess of 1,000 kilowatts, quite a lot in excess of 1,000 kilowatts. I think it's 1,088 they're reporting, and it's going to be, lo and behold, oh, what do you know, it's a hybrid. So yes, exciting stuff. So they're moving away from so 8-litre quad-turbocharged W16 to a hybrid powertrain.
This is exactly where hybrid's good, though, because electric motors are awesome for adding lots of punch because they have torque from low down. So stuff the environmental regulations. This is a performance thing. It's great.
Yeah.
Would we necessarily call it an environmentally friendly car? Probably not.
It's because a hybrid, damn it.
Yeah.
You're going to get that cool little diamond on your number plate. You know that you're environmentally friendly.
There's two things exciting about this. One is they're using hybrid power system, as we've already said, which means that technology potentially could filter down into more modest and accessible road cars. And the other thing is a stupid car called Hennessy Venom GT currently holds the world production car speed record. This new Bugatti might steal it back off of those silly Americans.
I remember you had a sensational rant about that Hennessy once, Dan. I recall that very well.
I did. Okay.
Dan having a rant? That is
all right.
Not,
all right.
Not
okay. Whinging palm.
But this is funny because this actually has competitors. We're in the hybrid hypercar space.
Well, everybody is doing the hybrid hypercar now. Ferrari's got one coming, and McLaren, and pretty much everybody.
What's the other one? Porsche.
Porsche are doing one.
918.
It's the done thing. And the only way, because, you know, the power has
Ferrari. La Ferrari, come on.
Yeah, you said that.
Oh, did you say?
Because power has to continually go up with every generation. Yeah. The only way to keep getting more power is to add electrification because that electric motor adds the punch you need.
Yeah.
They're not really doing it for green reasons.
No.
It's also that, you know, they know that if you can develop the absolute pinnacle of electrification for a hypercar where cost is no option, eventually that will trickle down and you can use it in things like Priuses in the future. Yeah. So it's a double...
We'd rather you didn't use it.
Yeah.
Hey, how much better would a Prius be if it had a LaFerrari drive?
That's true.
Come on,
that's true.
Think about it.
Okay,
But speaking of back from the near dead, have you heard this? Apparently Maybach's coming back.
Really?
There's a whisper.
I thought they were going to, because Mercedes decided to make, the only people that buy Maybachs are people who live in Dubai. And they were going to make
Russia.
They were going to make a ridiculous version of the new S-Class, which is in every way sufficient.
I love that Mike just described an S-Class as sufficient.
No, but for those needs. Yeah, totally.
And it doesn't do anything that a Maybach, it does everything that a Maybach does and more. I'd be surprised. But you know, maybe there is a line of thinking there.
Hopefully it'll look a bit better than the last one. Oh, God, that thing was hideous.
The only people who bought the last Maybach were rappers.
Yeah.
I think P. Diddy had one.
And Lindsay Fox. He's got two.
Does he?
Two.
Nice
two
one.
Maybachs. I mean, why would you have just one, though, Mike? Do you know what I mean? Like, why would you? have just won. It's just absolute lunacy. Speaking of lunacy, it's not lunacy. It's actually really, really interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this week. Probably last week, actually. I mean, let's be honest, the website I went to was updated quite some time ago. There's a video of a dude in Beijing. He's a Chinese guy. And he's driving around in a Lamborghini, I think, I don't know if it's an Aventador or something like that. And it's a bit of a social experiment. He invites women just walking down the street on their own to get into his car.
Oh, dear.
Hey, you, get into my car. Who, me? Yes, you, get into my car. Billy Ocean.
Get out of my brain.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
But he was in this bright green Lambo driving around and literally asked a bunch of women if they would get into his car and... Set 5 out of 7 of them got in.
Ooh, weird.
What did this guy look like?
Well, just
was he a handsome chap?
Oh, he's not like a supermodel, but he was not unattractive. He was an average looking
guy. But he's not so hot that women get into his car if he was driving in some Pintara.
Well, this is the thing. So they tried the experiment again, same dude, in a Chery J11.
Oh, what a cracking car for the other end of the spectrum.
Can you imagine? So that's a tiny little compact SUV. It looks so generic, it's not funny. And not one of the women got in the car.
Oh,
different
fantastic.
Women, but isn't that interesting?
And they put a woman in a Chery J11 and she drove up to 7 men and they all got in her car.
Can you imagine?
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing.
But why the hell not? Whatever.
It's basically they just wanted to kind of do a social experiment about material.
He's
you
just
know.
Teaching us anything we didn't know.
Well, not really.
Women like men with money.
But would you get into a car of someone you don't know? And they got in and then he asked them, it's like, why would you get in this car? I could be a bad guy. And they were like, oh, well, you know.
I'm sure there are some very rich psychopaths out there.
Well, there are.
But if you want to be subtle and be like a creepy person abducting people in cars and slide under the radar, you're probably not going to drive a Larry Lamborghini.
That's very true, actually. But
you know, the guy who committed the crime, what was he driving? Yeah, he was in a bright green Lamborghini. We can probably track this guy.
Yeah.
I think I know this guy. Yeah.
Do you know what's funny?
Can't catch him, but we can certainly, you know, try.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I have only ever... what's it called?
Hitchhiked, yeah.
Once in my life. And it wasn't even really hitchhiking. I was This is 15 years ago.
Isn't it illegal in Australia?
Yes, it is, which is why I shouldn't probably be saying this. But I was standing at a tram stop when I lived in North Caulfield. Living in North Caulfield, and it was very late. It was like midnight. I was waiting for a tram. There was no one else there. And a guy drove up in an old, cool, like, hotted up Mazda. And he was like, oh, mate, do you need a lift? And I was like... Okay, I said I live only a few tram stops up, and he said, okay, just get in. I'm like, okay, and I was drunk, and I did. And it was fine. He was actually really lovely. He wasn't even gay. He was just a dude.
Oh, right, that makes it fine then.
No. Well, you know, he would have seen me, and I would have been obviously extremely attractive standing behind the thing. And I got in the car, and then I ended up, and he drove me home, and he was like, oh, there you go, mate. See you later.
Good
and that was
Samaritan.
It. Yeah, it was weird. Hmm. But would we do it? Would you do that kind of thing?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to say yes, because that means, you know, I'm not scared of anything, you know, I'd like the idea of living in a society where you can do that with confidence, but there's another part of me which says probably not.
No. I don't think I'd do it I don't think I'd say no out of fear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not afraid of the most people, but I don't think I'd do it because it would just be an awkward conversation.
True.
Like, so, what's up?
Hey. Yeah. And that was the thing. We didn't even talk.
Murdered anyone lately? No. Oh, great. Excellent. I'm glad I got in.
Why is there an axe in the back seat? And is that a head? No. Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit strange. And look, let us know. Have you hitchhiked? Has it been safe? And would you do it now?
Please don't use your real name.
No. That's it. 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We would be very happy to hear from you. And we've got lots more coming up very shortly. You are listening to Joy 94.9, and the show is Fender Bender, which is just awesome, quite
it
frankly.
It is. Yeah. It is. I've said it before, Tim, and I'll say it again. It is Joy's number one motoring show.
It is. And we are ready to rev up your Saturdays, as the guy says at the start.
Yeah, you did it better.
Yeah.
Rev up. Oh, dear. No, that was... No.
A little bit of vomit in my throat. Boys, we've been talking about a lot today, but we're going to move overseas. We're going to move to Germany just really for a little while. And
Going to move to Germany
and talk about a controversial new car from the Bavarian Motorworks. Or I don't know how you say it in German.
Bayerische Motorwerke.
Oh, well.
Bayerische Motorwerke.
Nine. That's literally all I know, Joe.
This is the two series active tour we're talking about, isn't it?
It is controversial, though.
Yes, it is. It is controversial because it's got front wheel drive, meaning the engine sends its power to the front axle and not the rear one. It's a big deal because BMW said it would never do this because front-wheel drive inherently isn't as dynamic and fun because the front wheels are doing too much. They're turning and they're channeling the power and there's a whole lot going on there. Therefore, it will never handle as well as a rear-drive car, and BMW is all about handling. Ultimate driving machine, that is its motto. And this company has said repeatedly that it would never do this, even though Mercedes and Audi have been doing it for years. Problem is, front-wheel drive is so much better for packaging. So if you want a car with space inside it, which is what the 2 Series Active Tourer is, rear-wheel drive just ain't going to cut it. We do like a good package. So BMW's bitten the bullet, it's gone and done it. We knew this was going to happen, and the reality is it had to happen. It's much cheaper to do this, and in time, BMW will have 12 models spun off this front-wheel drive platform.
12?
Including the next 1 Series, the next X1, the next X2, which is a sporty version of the X1, a whole suite of small BMWs. In fact, any BMW below the size of an X1 will be front-wheel drive.
Wow.
With the option of all-wheel drive. This is just the first in that step. This car is pitched at the Mercedes-Benz B-Class, so it's sort of from a luxury brand, but it's really a family-oriented MPV, spacious little van.
Which they're big in Europe, aren't they? That kind
big
of style
in Europe,
of vehicle.
Not so big in Australia. Yeah. It's going to be priced at $45,000 in Australia for the entry version, which is more than the Mercedes B-Class, but it does have a lot more equipment as
does
well.
It?
So BMW is kind of not trying to beat the Benz on price, but they are trying to beat them on spec.
So it has a big package.
It does indeed have
super
a big package.
Best kind.
I was privileged enough to go to Europe to do the early drive of this vehicle before it comes to Australia. And look, it's not bad. The problem is BMW insists that this car is every bit the driver's car that a 3 Series is. It's foolish enough to say that just because it's front drive doesn't mean it's not sporty. And the fact is, it's just not sporty.
Yeah.
It isn't. It doesn't even have to be. It's not that sort of car. So it's weird that BMW is even trying to make it that way. Because for what it is, it's actually a very good thing. It's spacious, it's well packaged, it's got plenty of equipment, it looks okay. It doesn't really do anything wrong, it's just that they're trying to be sporty and it's not.
But didn't you told me, I think, Mike, that it's based on the Mini platform.
It is based on the Mini platform,
which is
a great chassis. It is indeed. It's a taller body shape, which doesn't help. Look, it handles fine, but it's no 3 Series, which is the problem.
Yeah.
And BMW shouldn't pretend that it is, because other than that, it's a fantastic car. It does everything it has to do. It's really a sign of the times, and it's sort of a test as an automotive fan whether you can accept that these things are necessary evils, because for a brand to continue to invest in sporty M cars, which we all love, it has to have bread and butter models that actually make it money, that it actually sells. And this is the sort of car that sells.
And they reckon they're going to sell a lot of them?
Yeah, they'll sell heaps in Europe particularly. Yeah. In Australia, it'll do okay. They got high expectations. But the more important thing here is to look at this platform and say that, well, the next 1 Series will be on this, the X1, the X2, a whole suite of vehicles, and this is just the start.
I think that's the interesting thing, is that the 1 Series is going to go in that direction. But it makes sense because the A3 is front-wheel drive, right?
Yeah.
Audi A3,
and the A-Class as well.
And the A-Class. So it's kind of they're the only ones really in that
And end of the day, the average person doesn't actually know the difference.
No.
It's only when you're really driving at the limit that you do notice the difference. In driving around the city, I don't want to make it sound like front-wheel drive is inherently inferior in all departments in driving. I mean, if you're on a racetrack, yes.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of adjusting your driving style. And the fact is, at this level, most people are never going to push the car to the limits.
Yeah.
So it's irrelevant. And there's no point in continuing to do it other than stubbornness.
Yeah.
BMW's realised this and working up to it. It's been very controversial, but it's one of those things that had to happen, and it has. And for a first effort, it's a pretty solid car.
Yeah, okay. And when's it arriving in this country?
Launching in November. It's priced from 45 to 55 grand. So across the spectrum, there's 2 petrol engines and 1 diesel engine. All the powertrains are good. The entry one is a 3-cylinder turbo from the Mini. Yeah. A 3-cylinder seems like an odd choice, but that kind of engine has come on in leaps and bounds in recent times. And a 3-cylinder is more fun than a 4-cylinder because it's just a 6-cylinder chopped in half. So it's got character.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a fantastic car. And looking beyond, I suspect that, you know, if they can make a 1 Series that's similar to this car in execution, the company will be fine.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
What does it look like in the flesh? Because in the pictures, you kind of go, eh, really?
Well, it's funny. I did a Facebook post for the publication that I write for, Car Advice, and the first commenter on that did a double up in Photoshop, and they put the two Series Active Tourer next to a Kia Rondo and did a side-by-side.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a little hard to tell them apart.
That's a good point.
It's kind of a sign
of the
times.
That's not necessarily a bad thing. I quite like the Rondo.
I think Rondo's
but it is a sign of the times that Kia is doing things before Beamer is, stylistically.
There you go. Yeah. Controversial.
BMW, dead to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and this, I was going to ask you this because you are an old school BMW fan. You own an old BMW. You're an enthusiast for the brand.
He's got a tattoo on his bum.
And if there was,
it's not of a BMW though.
No. It's a cat.
And well, he's got the BMW logo on each cheek. And says, ooh. But okay. As an old school BMW enthusiast who would be very much invested in the rear drive motto of the brand, what do you think of BMW going the front drive route, Dan?
I have various standpoints on this. I have to agree with what you're saying, that it's something that probably had to happen. The majority of owners of that segment of car don't really care about handling and how it goes on a circuit, which is fair enough. It's true to a certain extent. But I am a driving enthusiast, and I like the way cars go, and I like particularly well-handling cars, and I like BMW, because they do that, I think, fairly well across their range. The bigger issue here for me is one of marketing. What they have done here is they have pissed away their unique selling proposition in one foul swoop. All these years they've been saying, rear drive is the best, we'll never do anything other than that, and now they've gone completely against their word. It breaks down potential consumers' trust in the brand, and it makes potential new owners think that they're probably not worth their salt. They've done this before. In the same year they announced there was going to be a front-wheel drive BMW, they also said they were going to introduce the first, well, they did in 2010, introduce the first turbocharged car with an M badge on it, which they also said they would never do because turbocharging removes soul and it takes away exhaust note. So they did those two things that they said they never would in the same year. And for me, that was the year I started thinking maybe BMW are not so loyal to their USPs.
It's interesting because the new M4 with the turbo is actually a bit of a soulless car, I found. So
incidentally, the car they were talking about was the X5M. Which is a very good car, but they went against
three
their
turbos work. On it.
Someone this isn't BMW just the sole manufacturer guilty of doing this. Saab did it years ago. They went on record and said 220 brake horsepower. This is when I was back in the UK. Forgive me talking in alien terms. 220 brake horsepower is the absolute limit for a front wheel drive drivetrain. You can't get any more power down through that. The next Saab 9, I think it was a 9.5 Aero that came after it, was 240 horsepower.
And you put your foot down and you drove into a hedge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so these manufacturers, they're all doing it. What does it do to the brand?
Well, it's a company changing their mind. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like this is a corporation. They are an evil... Well, they're not mine. Not things, evil, yeah, but
minds
they're a corporation.
Are changed, right?
Like, do you know what I mean? Do you just...
Well, I think the moral of the story...
Refusing to move with the times.
Moral of the story
stickler.
Is just don't commit to anything.
Well, I support
it is an
that.
Interesting point though. Like, can you, as a fan of a brand, look at a relatively conservative front wheel drive family hatchback, and then look at the fact that this brand also makes an M3 or an M4 or any kind of supercar, an i8 electric supercar, and can you disassociate one from the other and say just because it makes a dull family hatchback, am I still in love with its sports cars, or does that fundamentally shift your entire perception of the brand?
Well, and that's a very personal thing, isn't it? For me, I couldn't give two hoots.
Neither could I.
No.
But there are people like Dan who is the sort of person who is a loyal BMW buyer who is concerned about it, and I think BMW should be concerned about that. Yeah. People like Dan are.
It's true. Outrageous.
Interesting.
Guys.
Of course, my opinion is worth so much.
It is. It is. Well, which is why I'm going to ask you now about the car that you drove this week. It's for Fiat 500. It's a tiny update. It's barely an update, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise that they actually bothered doing a drive day for the launch of this new car, in inverted commas. It is an update. We all know and love the Fiat 500. It's that blancmange mould, lovely little micro around town car. And there's also a high performance version of it, which not many people know about. It's called the Abarth. They've just updated that too. They've introduced a new model, a variant called the 595, and it's high performance. It is very good. It is a 1.4 turbo. The main differences are almost all of the Fiat 500s now have a little TV in front of the driver where the gauges once were, which has given it a new added sort of value. And it's brought it up to speed on a technology front that it might have been lacking on previously. Everything else, they've introduced new colour schemes, you know, new options to customise it, which means, as I said to you earlier in the week, Tim, it's that awful moment when you turn up at a party and someone else is wearing the same dress as you. You know, nightmare.
Listen to
nightmare.
It.
Happens
true,
to me
it is.
All the time.
And that is exactly what they're avoiding by introducing a new line of colours and shades. Anyway, so funny idea to introduce a drive day for a car which could have just been covered in a press release. But anyway, nonetheless, I drove this car, and I drove it out to, strangely, a racing circuit. But not just any racing circuit. It was a motorbike racing circuit.
What did you say?
Called Broadford.
Mm. Wonderful track.
Which is in Victoria. Mm. And we were all thinking, well, why on earth are we ending up at a motorbike? Anyway, we were there to drive, and I popped my racing car cherry, and ooh, I drove a Bathurst Winner.
Ooh!
Yeah, now back earlier in the year, there was a 12-hour race at Bathurst, the mountain.
You're not saying Bathurst anymore, Dan.
No, because no, I don't understand what I'm talking about. Oh, God, let's not revisit that again. And, yeah, so back in earlier this year, in February, there was a race at Bathurst, which is a 12-hour endurance race, and Fiat Chrysler entered three little racing car versions of the Abarth. This is a bonkers car. It is in excess of 150 kilowatts, in excess of 300 newton metres of torque, and it weighs under a tonne. It's got racing slicks each corner. It's a full race car, and the absolute lunatics let me drive it.
Idiots.
And it was possibly...
Was it a hoot?
It was... One of the most terrifying things I've ever done in a car.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, everyone says this. Everyone says the difference between a hot road car, a modified road car, and a race car is immeasurable. And I now know they are quite right.
Wow.
There is nothing, no similarity to the way a road car works when you've hopped in a full racing car. Now, this is an entry-level race car. Mm. It's a little thing. But my driver, the guy who sat next to me, who's a qualified racing driver, who incidentally was about 6 years old... He said to me, and this is a Formula Ford racer. He's a professional racing driver, drives Formula Fords, which is a notoriously difficult drive. He said the Fiat is the hardest racing car he's ever got behind the wheel of.
Really?
Yes. Mm. And I can see why. Ooh. Such a short wheelbase, tires that warm up and cool down in the blink of an eye. The thing was an absolute animal. And I
ooh,
think
yeah,
he suggested the fact that I even managed to pull away out of the pits and do a couple of laps and not crash and blow everything up was quite an achievement. So,
wow.
So there we go. So I was on the launch to drive a Fiat 500, actually ended up driving my first racing car.
Oh, wowzers. Did you wear a suit? Like a racing suit?
No. He did.
Oh.
This is
I didn't give you one.
Yeah, this reminds me of the time I had to go in a glider. I got in the glider.
Why would you do that?
My instructor had a parachute on. He didn't give me one. I was like, hang on, what's going on here? And this guy, yeah, the racing driver, had a full fire suit on and everything, and I just was in my very tasteful check shirt and jeans.
Motoring writers, we're expendable.
Yeah, we're true.
We die
true
in a fiery blaze. That's someone true will take our place.
Yeah, very exactly true. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure you ended up with needing to have a small change of undies.
I have to interject
that
on one thing though with the
please,
Fiat 500.
Please.
There is an outrageous travesty that's been overlooked on this car in that they
tell
relaunched
me
the 500 last year when Fiat Chrysler, a factory distributor, took over the brand rather than a private distributor. That's all boring stuff. But what it meant was they could cut the base price to $14,000 drive
point
away, which was a bargain, and they started selling boatloads of them. And just quietly, they've been upping the price bit by bit by bit, first to $15,000, then to $16,500. Now, $17,000 drive away for the base car. It's gone up $3,000 in 14 months, which at a car at that price point is an absurdly big leap. It's the equivalent of a BMW 3 Series going from $50,000 to $70,000 grand. It's a huge leap.
And I think if they relaunched it at that time and said at the time, it's like, this is just a launch price, it will be, you know, eventually this, then we wouldn't be so shocked. Mm. But I completely agree. I think it's a little bit cheap.
It's a very odd decision. Everywhere else in the world, the 500 costs more than the Panda. That's now the case in Australia, but it does seem a little bit rude for a car that's got a little bit older, hasn't had much of a significant update, has fallen further behind in terms of its age and things like that, and it's more expensive than it ever was. Come on.
That's very
Fiat
true.
That's a bit
outrageous
rich. I'm calling you out on that. That's crap.
You've been called out. Yeah, listen to it, you Italians. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We've got lots more coming up, so do stick around. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. I'm not sure why I said it like
yes,
that.
Yes, we have 10 minutes to kill, so we will talk slowly.
It is it's about 10 minutes to 3 o'clock. You are with Tim, Mike and Dan for another few minutes on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We have had, guys, a couple of texts in about, we were talking earlier about hitchhiking, whether you've done it, whether you would do it.
Whether The Guide to the Galaxy is the best series of books ever written. Oh, sorry, I'm getting...
Oh, dear, nerd. Now, Nick has texted in. Nick has said, I haven't hitchhiked, but recently stopped at a bus stop and offered an old lady a lift because it was freezing. She accepted, then regretted it, and was pressed up against the passenger door. So I was as friendly as ever, but she asked to get out. I don't think I looked that scary. Nick, I'm sorry to hear that.
Nick,
that's a brilliant
Nick
story.
Wearing a giant trench coat and having that big beard makes you intimidating to old ladies. I'm sorry.
I think so. A little bit.
I'm guessing here.
Yeah, possibly. We've also heard from the fabulous Mark from Detours, Joy 94.9's very own travel show, which is having a small break at the moment. I'm sure we'll be back. Mark was saying, when I was at school in Germany, hitchhiking was very normal. We used to do it all the time. I wouldn't do it here, though. It's not expected as a usual thing to do. I would, of course, pick up a hot hitchhiker if I had the opportunity.
Oh,
I have an axe.
As when I was up in Queensland, near Byron Bay, about 2 weeks ago, around Splendor time.
And,
hitchhike. I was there for work, but I was driving around the roads there, and there was a hitchhiker every 100 meters. Some of them were quite attractive.
Really?
Yeah. So you know, there was that thought.
That's dangerous, isn't it? Like you just
get a transit van. Get a trans man, fill it up with hot people.
Yeah, sure. Why not, guys? Or you could get a subcompact SUV.
Nice segue.
See what I did there? That was pretty bad, wasn't it? So, look, we don't have much time left, guys, but we do want to kind of have a look at this because look, they say it's a growing area, right? It is. It's booming. But the sales aren't insane ones.
They're getting there, but they're not massive yet. We're talking about cars like the Holden Trax, the Nissan Qashqai, the Nissan Juke. Nissan's quite well represented, really, isn't it? We're talking about things like the Peugeot 2008 and the Skoda Yeti, which nobody buys, and they should.
They should.
There's a whole spectrum of cars that are here. The Ford EcoSport, again, most of them are based on light-sized city cars, you know, like a Ford Fiesta or a Holden Barina. They're just jacked up. They've got a slightly tougher body on top of them, and it appeals to the sort of person who likes to sit up nice and high, doesn't really need to go off-road, and wants something that looks a bit tough in the driveway.
And there's a few more coming. Like, this isn't it, guys. We've got the Honda. Honda's resuscitated the HRV nameplate, which, if
I
you
still
remember,
call it the Vajazzle.
They were going to call it the. What was it? Vezel? Was that what
there was
they
a concept
call
called the Vezel that previewed it, and I called it the Vajazzle.
Honestly, what were they thinking?
I think I called it the
Vajazzle
in front of the Honda CEO as well.
As you should.
I've got a bit of a soft spot for a particular.
A Vajazzle?
For a particular Honda SUV. Can you guess which one it is?
CRV. It's the only one they've got.
No.
The original HRV.
No. It's a bit bad boy. It's a large SUV.
The MDX.
Yes.
That is the dullest soccer mum American.
No,
I just fell asleep.
There's something a bit cool about it. It kind of preceded, it sort of preempted large SUVs to an extent. And if you look at it, next time you see an MDX, incidentally, the name MDX is cool as well.
Sounds a bit tough.
It does. It sounds tough. It's got those funny little peering lights at the front, which could be a little bit Veyron at the front. It is, mark my words, it's a badass SUV.
Tim, can you switch his mic off, please?
I think I'm going
We're having a real conversation.
I think he's off
he's
chops now.
Craziness.
I like the MDX. So I said it.
That is the weirdest thing I've heard. But look, coming back to the subcompact things, I mean, look, I don't know about you guys, I would just buy a little light hatch, like a Fiesta, like a Mazda 2.
But it's interesting because if you look at the sales figures at the moment, the whole market's down a little bit, but the sales of light cars, again, we're talking about Yaris's, you know, Volkswagen Polos, Mazda 2s, Ford Fiestas, the works, they are unanimously down this year, way, way down at a rate that far exceeds the rest of the market.
Yeah.
Small cars, which are the Corollas and Mazda 3s, are also down. So light car buyers aren't going into small cars. Where the hell are they going? I think they're going into this new segment because they're thinking, well, for not much more money, I could get something that rides a bit higher, hops curbs a bit easier, easy to get the kids in and out of. I have a more commanding road view.
Yeah.
Most people don't care about handling. These things don't handle as well, but they don't care about that.
Yeah.
It seems to me that they're really swallowing up a lot of traditional light car sales.
I think they are. But as you've said before, Dan...
Probably too much.
No. About, you know, the ride height. It's like, well... If everyone's in a car that has that ride height, then there's really no advantage.
SUVs. Then you end up like America.
It's an arms race on our roads, is that you have to get the next tallest, biggest SUV. Otherwise, you seem to be putting your family at risk.
Mm.
If I don't drive a Land Cruiser, then, you know, I'm basically murdering my children.
Toyota should totally use that as a marketing campaign.
Can you
know those billboards, like,
that's gold.
Every family loves a Kluger, and then the next one is just a grim red billboard with a 200 series Land Cruiser. You don't drive this car, you are killing your children.
Oh, dear.
That's really what, in a very subtle way, the marketing is doing for these SUVs.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. We've just had another text from the fabulous Chris from CNC Drive Factory. My hubby owned an HRV when I met him. It was close to being a deal breaker. And you know what? Chris, I'm with you. I actually... dated a chap many, many years ago, and he had
Vitara.
One.
No, you went...
No, Vitaras are cool. HRVs not
I dated
cool.
somebody with a Vitara and I dated somebody with an HRV.
Oh,
anyway.
Dear.
It would be a deal breaker for me, that one.
Possibly.
Absolutely.
Look, we could be here all day talking about people I've dated, literally. But it is time to go, boys. So
Tim's locking the door to the studio. I think he's going to tell us
what's happening. In next week's episode, we're going to be talking continuously for an hour about all the people Tim has slept with.
Oh, God. That we'd need longer than that. I kid. Mike and Dan, thank you so much for being here today. We will see you guys very soon, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for everyone for texting in. And do stick around. Of course, we've got Critical Hit with Luke and the gang very, very shortly, talking about gaming. And then, of course, Hannah is with us for Little Fish. That's me done. This is Tim Nicholson signing off for Fender Bender. Safe driving.
Bye. This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.